Hi, this is Circe Olson-Westner. I'm the director of the Museum of the American Military Family in Tejeros, New Mexico, and this is our podcast, At Ease.
And hi, I'm Sherry Avila. I'm the museum storyteller, and we're speaking with Charmaine Perry Knight about her book series, I Move a Lot and That's Okay.
So we're really glad to have you on our podcast today. It's April, Month of the Military Child, and we're showcasing books by military brats. And of course, your books are not only written by a brat, that's you. You've written two, so that makes it like a double feature for us today. So we're excited to have you. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. You know, it wasn't until I got older that I loved the word brat.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about that later. But yeah, so welcome.
All right, so being a brat myself, I can really relate to your books. And as the museum storyteller, I'm glad you have the opportunity to share your story. What advice would you give me to encourage other brats to share their stories?
I would tell them to start with what's referred to as low-hanging fruit. Keep your own memories in mind. And so anytime I share a story from my past with someone who did not grow up in the military, is not a part of the military community, they go, wow, that happened. If that's the reaction, that may be a story you want to share.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. Well, actually, speaking of stories, so Sherry and Donna, who's our brat liaison, actually came up with a really clever, an easy way to take old photos and make them into a digital photo album using PowerPoint. And that was kind of cool. So for all of our listeners out there who don't want to write or don't feel like they should write their stories, but they have tons of photographs, I'll post the link on how to make our little photo books below this podcast. But we're back to talking about the moving books.
All right. And I'm quite a bit older than you because I know what you're graduating high school. And although there are obvious similarities, I believe there are a lot of differences because of the advances in technology. What do you think there are some of the similarities and differences with today's generation of brats from earlier generations of brats?
Well, some similarities are, it's that same concept of leaving everything that you know and love behind. So some very similar, like the social and the emotional experience of it all, the physical aspect as well. Some of the differences, like when I was moving, you would write letters to your friends. Mm-hmm. Yes, you had a house phone, but the idea of someone allowing you to make an international call back to the US to call your friend, just, you know, that didn't exist.
Didn't happen.
It was before Facebook, before Instagram existed, guys, you know, before MySpace, all of that. And you wrote letters to your friends. So that I think I have in common with a lot of the older generations. Mm-hmm. The younger generations are, I would say they have an advantage because they can Snapchat someone. They have FaceTime and WhatsApp video. We had VTC and you couldn't talk to someone downrange unless that was set up by the unit.
Okay, so what's VTC?
Video teleconferencing. That was that old version of what is now called Skype. The military had this in the 80s, right? And in the 90s. So when family members deployed, you were able to talk to them for limited periods of time if that unit was allowed to talk.
Very cool.
Well, you know, and that kind of brings me to mind when my son deployed. So when my husband deployed, you're right, we did letters. And if we were lucky, we could maybe make a phone call every once in a while and they'd have to stand in line and get to a call to call us back. But with my son's unit, he was IMing. And if he stopped IMing, that was worrisome because then I knew that they were told they weren't allowed to communicate. So something might have happened. So I'm not sure it's makes you feel better if you are having somebody who's deployed where you have cell phone and FaceTime and Skype and IM. And then something happens, you kind of instantly know it, as opposed to in our day, it was a letter or a phone call and you didn't expect. I'm wondering what's more stressful for the family.
It may be more stressful that the fact that they have constant communication when that ceases. Mm-hmm. We had a little more, I guess we were used to waiting 3 weeks or more for the letter to reach there, hoping they respond in a week and waiting 3 more weeks or longer to get there. So maybe like 2 months or so. as a typical turnaround, but for those who are used to constant contact,
yes,
that lapse, I'm sure, creates a lot of anxiety. So I feel like we had a better experience.
Yeah, maybe. So I wanted to ask you a question. So we mentioned brat, and you said you have changed your opinion of it. So how do you feel about the term brat, and do you identify as a brat?
As a younger military child, I did not like the term because you only think of the negative connotation. As you become older, you realize it's an identifier saying this person is resilient, they move around, they are the cream of the crop, or this may be me adding words to the definition. But it's a group that you want to have that sense of community, and it creates a sense of community.
Right.
Yeah. That's definitely for me. That's how I feel. I feel like if you're a brat, then, you know, you're one of my squad, you know, yeah. I can hang with you, you know? So immediate identifier. I definitely agree. So what did your dad do in the Army?
So I changed a little bit of the story, just thinking good OPSEC, right? You want to have a little bit of difference between your true life. And I made this character in the Army, their family. I grew up in the Air Force. So what my father did in the Air Force is he worked with telecommunications. That's how I knew about the VTC program, because he helped to build that. He was IT within the Air Force. And so he was gone quite a bit. I want to say maybe 9 months or more of every year, just the nature of his work. We spent a lot of time at NATO bases and mostly overseas in Europe and in the Middle East. And so you just become very familiar with missing one family member, and it becomes constant that they're not there. So everyone else becomes your extended family on the base.
It's interesting. So you changed from, when you were talking about the character, you were talking about the first book with Grace.
Yes.
Right. Okay. But you have another book, right?
Yes.
So and the main character is?
Axel.
And is that Army as well?
Yes, I have a few friends that are serving, and they said, well, I'm a female soldier and I want to see myself represented, you know, and I have a son and my husband is a supportive spouse. And so I used the same story to create a boy character named Axel, and the mom is in the military, because that's a reality as well. I'm familiar with Fort Benning because we've lived down there in that base, but we did move from Georgia all the way to Southern Italy in Naples. So that every aspect of it is true. The exception of I changed the base. Instead of it saying Warner Robins Air Force Base, Georgia, I chose Fort Benning, Georgia.
So you mentioned a little bit that your dad traveled a lot while you were gone. What was your childhood like growing up as a brat?
A lot of change. And it became very normal to expect that no day would be the same. And I'm fortunate to have three siblings. So most of our days were filled with, you know, just enjoying each other, exploring the new place that you lived in. Like when we lived in Turkey, I made sure I spent a lot of time meeting different individuals, learning the language, just really enjoying and soaking up the culture. So I would say my childhood was rich with experiences that when you tell someone, they go, wait a minute, you saw the opera in Italy at a small age? What? They're like, oh, you went to the Louvre in Paris? And so those were typical experiences for many of us who live overseas, but the people that are outside the military community living in the US would see that as something extraordinary. So the things I took for granted, just because it was my experience, is seen as so extraordinary by some of my peers now.
Right. And just to add on to that, I not only would say that thing I was drawn, I think that a lot of the people I told the story to thought I was lying.
Yeah,
you know, they were like, that, you know, that can't be true, you know. And so it wasn't until Donna Mazzell's, you know, video Brats, Our Journey Home, where I saw that video and I was just like, that is true. It is true. I've been telling, you know what I mean? It was like really reaffirming to me watching that and seeing other people like myself, because by that time it had been so long since I had been connected with other military people. Have you stayed in contact with the military after you left home, or?
Yeah, everyone I've ever known grew up in the military for the most part. And we are all each other's extended family. Those of us who lost family members in the service, you know, your parents became their parents and you became unofficially siblings across all backgrounds and races and cultures, you were tied together because you went to the same school or you had a snow fight in the middle of Wiesbaden and you guys won versus the other team, right? Mm-hmm. And so you just created these bonds that last a lifetime. So many of us, while we don't live in the same city, state, or country, we keep up and their kids chat with the other kids and we check on each other's parents and just connect. Every few weeks we're talking and finding out how can we all get together once COVID settles down.
So we ask this of a lot of our guests. So we're going to ask you too. So where was your favorite place to live and your least favorite place to live and why?
So my favorite place and my least favorite place was the same.
Oh.
I know that's unique. And I would say it is Italy. I love, love, love Italy. I loved Naples, loved all my experiences, but the first 2 or 3 months, it was my least favorite. I didn't like the smell of sulfur in the air. I didn't want to learn the language just because you're being uprooted from everything you know and love. Mm-hmm. And you write your class and they didn't write me back at first. And I was just really, I remember being upset about that. So those first 3 or 4 months, I was like, this place stinks. After that, I just fell in love with it. Once I decided that I'm going to be here a while, I've got to get used to it. And I just met some more people. It became my favorite place in the world. And whenever I travel back to Europe, it's the first place I go. I want to go back and look at my house in Naples and just visualize me playing soccer in the yard.
So is that what motivated you to write books about moving, you know, your own experiences? And then also, what's different about your books and other books on moving that's out there already? So it's a 2 questions.
Yes. So first, my own experiences motivated me to write. I said, this is the book, I move a lot and that's okay, is the book I wish I had as a younger child moving quite a bit. Because you only know your experience from the way that you see it. And until you encounter others with that experience, you think you're the only one, even though you're not. And so the other side of it is, while there are a lot of books for military families, I do not see as many written from a child's perspective, you know, and really talking about the social and the emotional aspects of moving. Because you typically think of the service member, you may honor their spouse, maybe an honorable mention of the child, but you're not delving into their social or their emotional development, how it affected them when this life decision changed their entire world. And so that's what I like about it. You really get to experience the highs and the lows through a child's eyes and then realize that they do like their location. They're just a little, you know, they're a little apprehensive at first. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So speaking of the book, do you have a copy of the book that you can show us?
I do. This one right here is I Move a Lot and That's Okay, Axel's story. This is my character down here, Axel. And the mom is in the military. Dad is a supportive spouse because you do see this sometimes. And I have another one right here. This is I Move a Lot and That's Okay. I'm trying to make sure I'm in the middle here. And Grace is the main character and Dad is the service member and Mom is the supportive spouse.
And the illustrations are wonderful. I really like the illustrations. So how did you find your illustrator and kind of what was your collaboration process for him or her to be able to create such nice pictures?
What I did initially is I said, how do I take the story that's in my mind and put it on paper? And I said, you need to create detailed illustration notes. On this page, I want it to look like this. I created the characters' rooms in the fashion of my room. I made sure they're wearing a cartouche, which is something that many of the military kids are wearing. It's hieroglyphics on one side and English on the other. When you see this, you typically know that person's family has served in the military because you see a lot of the kids with this, right? I said, I want to have some hidden symbols. I incorporated many pictures of my childhood. Like the picture of the base, I have that picture. The picture of the school, that is the front of Naples Elementary School. You know, the picture of the home is fashioned after my home. So I said, how do I incorporate my own memories into this? And then I went online, I found an illustration contract, ran it through my attorney first, and I did a work for hire agreement, which means I own all the images outright. But it's constant communication as part of that process where you're creating a character and then saying, I want her eyes to be wide. I want you to see and feel her smile. I want her to have big hair. Dad's nose to be a little bit straighter. I want mom's shoulders to drop a little more. So you have to be very detailed in the way that you want to see the photos.
This is totally unrelated, but I also have a cartouche necklace.
Do you see? Yeah,
well, I bought it in 1979 in Cairo and had it made. Yeah, but I love it. Mine happened to get lost in a lake in Massachusetts in the mid 80s. So years from now, archaeologists are going to be digging up that lake and they're going to be confused.
Why is it the one? They will be confused.
Right. Middle of a lake in Massachusetts.
I like that.
So I saw on Amazon that these books are also available as coloring books. And so I know that you said you own all the rights to them, but do you have copies of the coloring books to show us?
I do. So I used the same illustrations and created the coloring books. This page here is her classroom, Grace. Mm-hmm. And I fashioned it after my second grade teacher, Mr. Mossberg. So that's the character you're seeing in there. I do keep in touch with him. And I said, I'm using you for my book. He was one of my favorite male teachers.
Well, you know, that's something else that I notice about kids that go to the Dodd schools, the Dodea schools, that they do have this relationship with their teachers that years later, they're friends on. I'm still friends with my first grade teacher, and that was 1967. So we're still friends. It's I think it's a small world, teacher and student for Dodea. Beautiful illustrations. So, let me see. We made this huge list of questions. All right.
So, Charmaine, so you have the Grace book and the Axel book and the coloring books. Is there anything else you plan to do with the series moving forward?
Yeah, just digging in my own mind for a moment. You know, being at home during COVID really allowed me to just let my creativity flow. And I started to write a lot of the stories, like you said, no one ever believed when you told them. Mm-hmm. Like, you've never seen the tomb where Jesus was buried. I was like, I've seen that before, Ephesus. Like, you've never seen, you know, all of these stories. I go, what? So I started to write these things down, and I'll be writing about the experience of once someone's parent is deployed, when they return, how they're different. Mm-hmm. Experiencing PTSD from a child's perspective, when the service member, struggles with that or copes with that. You know, remember, you're probably like me where you grew up during a time period in the military where it wasn't as supported as it is now. You know, it's heavily supported. There's a lot of resources, but before there was a lot of shame associated with it. And I'm glad we've moved past that phase, but I want to talk about that. I want to talk about when, you know, when 9/11 happened, how that felt as a child being overseas. What, you know, so lightly touch on it so they can still see the social and the emotional aspect, but talk about the physical change. This is a prime time during COVID to let kids know that, you know, resilience and hope are still important. And we want you to experience the highs and lows of emotions, but to understand that on the end, you will grow and you will be better from it. So I want to talk about just different experiences living in Turkey and riding the school bus, and they had armed guards because during that time, there was a lot of challenges happening. So we had armed guards on the school bus. Just talking about that, because it's still relevant today, you know, just bringing some really deep stuff to the surface and being able to talk in a 7, 8, 9-year-old, 10-year-old's mind and say, okay, what does this look like to you?
You know, just when you were talking, I was thinking, so I grew up my whole life overseas. And so I would see my relatives, they were every 2 years for this reemployment leave, we'd go every once in a while and see them. And I literally never attended a funeral until I was in my 30s. People died, but they were always distant. I'm wondering if many other military brats, because they are kind of traveling a lot, they're kind of removed from family tragedies. That might be a good topic. I mean, literally my first funeral that I attended was in my 30s. I may be the only person out there that no. had that experience, but
no, me too.
If that's a good topic, how to deal with the death of a family member that you really don't know that much, but everybody is terribly, terribly sad, but I don't know. Just throwing out something that popped into my head. This is why we have scripts, so I don't go off topic.
But this is important because in our world, the day-to-day of who you see is the world.
Right.
Everyone else, it's like, okay, you're here sometimes, but you're not really here, and you get used to them being away, so the death is a little bit different because that person you weren't interacting with daily. You miss them. You know, you had a little bit of a relationship, but remember, we grew up in the time where you weren't video chatting with these people. You didn't see them every day. You lived primarily overseas. You were the family that lived overseas. You know, you only came back every once in a while to the US, which wasn't even every year to us. So what does that look like? How experiencing death from someone even who's like a, I guess you consider a family member, but they're like a neighbor on the base and they lost their parent. And you feel for it in a way that that person is connected to you because that was like your other dad.
Right.
As opposed to someone who's your blood relative that you have a connection with, but it's not as strong because you don't see them physically. So a kid struggling with that may feel, they may feel guilty.
Right. So that might be a thing, a topic to think about.
Let's co-write it.
Yeah. Hey, I'm all in.
I'm all in.
We'll try write it. Let's try it.
Well, we do dabble in writing in this museum. So when I read on your bio, your Innovation Consultants of DeKalb website, you know, it mentioned that you traveled through Asia and the West Indies and you've lived and studied in Europe and the Middle East. And we know that a little bit from your conversation. But I'm assuming some of your travels have happened when you're an adult because you keep alluding that you keep going back to Naples when you go to Europe. Do you think your mobile childhood has made you more adventurous just to go out and go places?
Yes, you become like a mini adult in many ways, right? Mm-hmm. So your job is to fit in when you live overseas, mm-hmm. learn the language, mesh in the culture as best as possible so that service member does not have to worry about you while they adjust. So you learn to quickly develop instincts to follow those instincts, and you're adventurous. You'll go to the store a couple miles away because you know enough Italian to do it, or enough Turkish, French, German, whatever it is. And so as I've gotten older, I just naturally have this travel bug. I don't want to sit in one place very long. So twice a year, I want to travel internationally. Some people dream of cars, clothes, mm-hmm. you know, all these fancy shoes. I save up for my vacations. I'm like, okay, I can cut corners. I don't need to buy these like over the top shoes. They're cute. I want to go on a 10-day trip here. And so I need 6 days off of work to do this. So this is just how I strategize. Because we grew up, everything was so mobile. We moved every year or 2 or 3 years. You are used to traveling and it becomes a part of your development to experience new cultures. And so I said, I am not going to rob myself of an opportunity to learn something new and to experience the world for something tangible. I couldn't put a price tag on the memories that I have. Like I could put a price tag on some clothes. You know, I don't feel for it the same way. So I am going to travel every year. And I've been doing virtual museum visits this year so I can feel like I've traveled the world and I've been enjoying that.
So I know some of the, was it the Van Gogh Museum's totally online now? Which virtual museums have you done?
Done Van Gogh. Mm-hmm. I saw the Louvre was virtual recently. Mm-hmm. And then they have the Körperwelten, what's the word for it? The Bodies Museum. I was thinking the German word for it.
Oh.
Bodies Museum. I saw it very shortly where they were virtual. And I said, okay. So just any event I can go to virtually, I try to attend.
Well, very cool. So you appear to be a true Renaissance woman, you know, so you're a writer and motivational.
Aren't we all as brats?
Yeah. You know, you're a talent coach and an educator, an innovator and a business owner because you started your own consulting firm. How did you figure out that this is what you wanted to do? And I'm asking, like you said, with all these brats. I'm asking because I think a lot of military spouses and brats have all these different skills that they've cobbled together from moving and having to do all these incredible things. And over their lifetime, they have developed huge talents and they don't know how to cobble those talents into like a career. And so what would you tell somebody who's sitting on this gold mine of talent that they don't even know they have? They don't even know what to do with it.
First, if they're doubting themselves, I would say why? Mm-hmm. Why doubt yourself? Mm-hmm. I have a quote, and this is exactly what I would tell them. If you don't mind, I'll read it.
Okay.
And it simply pretty much says, why not? Mm-hmm. That I just kind of live my life with the why not aspect. Mm-hmm. If I can really quickly. Yes. It says, whatever you think you can't do, just know there is someone who is confidently doing it wrong right now. They have no plans at doing it better either, and people are paying them to do it. So please believe in your own excellence as much as they believe in their mediocrity.
Wow.
So what I would tell them is just do it anyway. If you try and you fail, at least you tried.
Yeah.
And is that a Charmaine Perry Knight's quote, or did that come from someone else?
No, I found it online, and whoever created this did not give us justice because they didn't put their name associated with it. But it speaks volumes to me. Like, why not? If other people believe in themselves and they're putting their products out and their voices and their stories, we should do it too. Every military kid I've ever known has the same wild imagination I do, right? Mm-hmm. They have these memories and people are telling them that, yeah, you're a storyteller, that didn't really happen. But very few of them are writing their stories. Very few of them are starting the business. And we have all of the skills possible. I would say Dodds has some of the best schools around. I know I'm biased because I went to Dodds schools.
Right, right.
But you are truly learning things that can't be taught in a book when you are experiencing another culture firsthand. You have that true, like you said, that Renaissance piece. Mm-hmm. Anything is at your disposal. You literally lived and survived many different countries as a kid, like going off on your own, living life, trying something different. You probably shopped in a grocery store at like 8 using your language skills and came right. home.
Right.
Why not? Why not just try it?
Well, cool. Because, you know, we do find ourselves, I'm a military spouse as well as a brat. And, you know, we, you know, as part of our lives, we had to plan functions and we had to do activities that we wouldn't have done in the States. And I think all of those are kind of skills. Like my mother-in-law, she produced a whole fashion show at the embassy in Bonn. It's like, who does that, right? So wow. She has like planning skills and project management skills and, you know, negotiating skills because she had to get stores to donate the clothes, you know, or lend them. So I agree with you. You can do anything. You can take these things that are just ideas in your head that, oh yeah, I've done that once, and turn it into something that would make a career. Just put it on a resume somehow.
Yeah.
Event planner or something.
PCSing is project management at its finest.
Yeah, absolutely.
You are event planning. You're making sure like things aren't getting broken. Your logistics. I mean, you're out here working with a budget. You're managing a team, which is your household. You're reaching out. You're working with subject matter experts to find the house, locate the grocery store, get your license.
Yeah. You're
doing all of these things, but many times we minimize our contributions because you don't see yourself as it's a job, but it is a job.
Right. So I have to ask about, I've got to ask about your other books. I love that you've made these into coloring books. And then, so I'd like you to tell us the process of those. Did you decolorize the colored pictures? But also you've written relationship books and journals. So I want to know about those.
So I'll start with the coloring book because that's the easier answer. Like you said, you create the line art, which is just the stenciled portions, and you put those aside because you use that to help build your drafts for your final illustrations. Then you have them colored. So all of those items that are not used, what can you do with it? They're in black and white form. They're perfect for a coloring book. So that was an easy piece with that. Now the relationship side, funny story, I got married during the pandemic. We had this really nice event hall planned, and then boom, here comes COVID. So I said, okay, we're moving into a new house that we just bought. Let us still get married. And we did our first virtual wedding in it and attended, I guess. And I said, let's write about this. All of the photos we took for our engagement shoot, I said, let me have someone make them a cartoon version, illustrate it. And I'm going to put that out there. So everyone who would have attended in person, we sent this to them for the virtual experience. And so they got to color and post photos of us online that they colored. And I said, I'm going to make this a relationship book. Let's talk about some probing questions to help you spend time together. Let's have some virtual dates involved. And people actually like it. It was something designed initially just for the two of us. And I said, this is really nice. Like you said, I kind of made the family, I tested out on the family. And they were like, this is fantastic. You're sending this out to everyone? I was like, yeah, I just printed and sent them out to everyone. They said, no, someone could really enjoy this. So now I've been working with others to just put that in the market.
Wow. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. COVID creativity.
I've been more creative during the COVID pandemic. My dad and I wrote a book. Every week we would pick a topic and we'd have to write an essay on it. And so we did enough essays back and forth to do one book that came out last year, and now we're doing a second one. And a lot of it is family history and memories, but then some of it's talking about the world events and some of it's talking about big pictures. So he got to pick a topic and I'd pick a topic, and then I'd pick topics that were like, I knew he didn't know anything about, and he'd have to, and you know, talk about good education. He went to a one room schoolhouse through eighth grade, and that man, I think, is brilliant. So I don't know, he learned so much that, so he's like, of course I know what samsara is. I'm like, what? Yeah. You know, it's like, okay, no. So I just pick a random word and throw it out there. So yeah, we're on book two.
Fantastic.
So for books like what you were just talking about, so do you collaborate with other people, like, you know, subject area experts like marriage counselors, psychologists? And I was thinking again for your upcoming book that you were talking about, you know, addressing PTSD. Are you going to talk to experts? What kind of like research projects are you going to be doing, you know, prior to the book? And you said you tested this one out on your family. Any other willing guinea pigs?
Yes. So what I can tell you is I'll be working with different counselors and doing a lot of research. Remember, before there wasn't a lot of study around what PTSD looked like. Now we're seeing, you know, it's destigmatized and there's so much more around us. I'll be doing a lot of research to find out where we are in terms of what it looks like for service members, what it looks like the experience for the family in itself, and just making sure that I also share this with other professionals and say, well, what do you think about this? So a lot of research and incorporating some excerpts from that. Now with the children's books, I had what I consider my beta readers. These are my nieces and my nephew. I have three nieces and a nephew, and they are my best and my toughest critics. And nice. I figure if you can ask children if they like something, they will give you the thumbs up if it's fantastic. They will tell you if it is terrible because children are brutally honest. And they told me the first couple drafts of these kids' books, they didn't like them. They were like, I don't like that. Doesn't make sense. Two of them are military kids, two are not.
I was going to ask that. Are they military?
Two are military kids, two are not. And they're like, wait a minute. What about this? You said you went here. What about that? You know, you're leaving a part out. And I was like, oh, wow. So the kids are brutally honest. So they were my test group. And so I do like that. I said, you can't just create based off of what you want and to share with others. You have to see if it relates to people. And after that, when they were like, I really like that one, Auntie Shemaine. I was like, okay, you do like it. Good.
Nice.
So it passed the first test. Now let's get some parent readers. So again, to speak to your point, research is so important to me. You've got to keep learning and growing, but more importantly, you need to have research to back up what you're doing. You don't just want to write for the sake of it.
Right.
And for PTSD, it's such a touchy but important topic. I'll be making sure to incorporate some statistics and some real scenarios around that just to make sure I give that subject justice.
Right.
So in the few minutes we have left, what would you like our viewers to know?
I would like them to know that I have a request for them. Well, one, they can do anything they possibly put their mind to. I mean, whatever you can dream, you can have it, right? And it's not just a saying, it's true. but I have a request for them. I want to ask that when they purchase this book, after they their families enjoyed it, donate it to a local library. Literacy is the foundation of where we're going, where we are, where we've been. And it is so important that children have books to dream in and an adventure waiting for them inside of a book. You could be the person that provides it to them. Even if you don't have children, purchase a book and donate it to someone else. Even if they're not a military family, a child can see a book as an adventure and it really broadens their vocabulary. So for me, the library was one of the most important stops at any base. I would find out where's the library because I want to go somewhere. And the only way I knew to travel at that time was through a great book. So please, you know, take advantage of buying books for kids.
And thank you. Yeah, same here. The public library every Saturday, my mom took us, we get a big stack of books. Yeah. And then repeat it every Saturday, you know, and it was a huge part of my growing up, you know, that's the, you know, when we get to the base, where's the library, you know? And so, yeah, I definitely can relate to that.
I have a library story. So I was a bookworm when I was a kid, and I had 32 overdue library books from the
library. Wow, 32? Oh my goodness.
And my father got a letter from the commander, right? And even though he was a DOD civilian, he still got this letter from the commander. And I guess it wasn't a very friendly letter. And so he, you know, barged home and he said, you need to get all these library books. We have to take them back to the library. And then you cannot go to the library for 6 weeks. So I was grounded from the library. To make it even worse, so I had all 32 books all stacked up. So some of them must have been skinny, but I had all these books in my hand and I'm carrying to the car and I'm snuffling and crying because I'm in trouble. And, you know, my dad never gets mad at me. And here I am in deep trouble. And then I dropped the stack of books all over his foot. See, I'm traumatized to this day, banned from the library for 6 weeks. It was the longest 6 weeks of my life.
Oh, that's a book. Can you imagine what it was like for kids like us to hear, I can't go to the library? I lived for the library. That was my spot. So that's a whole book. You could write that with your dad. You can write his side. You can write your side.
Yeah, actually, that would be something because, you know, he may have forgotten that story, but I never did. You know, it's kind of interesting to see what people remember that are important to them. Like we traveled through Turkey too. Yeah. So Speak a few words.
And my brother's a Turkish linguist. He was over in Turkey for like, what years were you in Turkey?
Okay. We were in Turkey. Let's see. 94, 95. And I think 93.
94. Okay. All right. He was in Erzurum. For a couple years, and then he went to wherever the command was in Turkey.
Izmir.
It's where the Molmen, the old Molmen of, or they call them the Ankara, because it's all underground tunnels going to buildings because there's so much snow.
Oh, I remember that, but I don't know the name of it right now. Okay.
I don't know. I never went, but.
Well, you know, my parents lived in Turkey in the 1950s in Izmir.
Okay. Yeah, where?
In Izmir.
Oh, in Izmir.
We lived in Izmir.
I think it's like Erzurum. Erzurum is where my brother was.
Okay.
Something like that. But Izmir. Small
world.
So maybe it's a small word. So here we are. Brats connecting. We all have a Turkey connection.
And I just like that, we made a new friend.
Yeah. I can say Merhaba.
Nasıl sınız?
My brother lives in San Antonio, or close to San Antonio now. And so, there's a Turkish rug store near the Alamo. So any people come visit, you know, when they go to the Alamo, then he goes by the rug store, you know, and he starts speaking Turkish to them. And they're like, oh, and then they're like, come in the back. We sit there and drink tea. And they're like, oh, no.
I do that. So I'm in Atlanta now and I found a Turkish restaurant. And same time I go in, I found out the gentleman is from Buca, which is a small part of Izmir where I was living. And he lived maybe 3 or 4 streets away from where we lived. So I go and I practice my Turkish. He's like, oh, come in the back. So I get to go in the back of the restaurant, which I love. And pre-COVID, you know, you get some of the best of the best because, you know, people make the best options for themselves. And I'm bringing my husband. He was like, what? I was like, oh, not so simple. Çok güzel abi. You know, and I'm just talking. He's like, what? I was like, oh, I also speak Turkish. Sorry. Small world, though.
Çok güzel means very good, right?
Very good, yes.
Yeah, and is çok fenal really bad? How do you say very bad?
Çok. Oh, I'm trying to remember.
See, the memory from like the 1960s is, that's it. It's just coming through really slowly.
And it comes back sometimes in flashes, right? Yeah. So that's another way that I really connect with a lot of other military families is somebody starts talking about where they lived. And just like that, you share a story and now we're connected. Yeah. And whenever we talk about that. And so 10 years could go by, but you're still connected at the hip and the love is there and it's real and it's authentic. So I made sure in the dedication to I Move a Lot and that's okay. I wanted to say that you were honoring their thoughts, feelings, and experiences of children because they're making friends across cultures, which is something we need to teach more of in right. today's society. Just not acceptance, but a true love for diversity because we wanted to learn each other's backgrounds. Like, okay, your hair looks different. Like, where's your family from? Tell me about it. Can I learn to cook with your grandma? And everybody was just authentic with their curiosity and just loving on each other. I want the world to get back to that at some point.
So really quickly, tell us where we can find your books, your Instagram, your social media, your website, all that stuff. Give us some of your addresses or handles or whatever they are.
On Facebook and Instagram, you can find me on Amazing L-Y Shermaine. So it's Amazingly Shermaine.
Okay.
And that's my website as well, amazinglyshermaine.com. Mm-hmm. But you can also get to the website if you type in booksformilitaryfamilies.com. That will redirect you to the same website.
Okay, very cool. Very cool. So I'll put some links underneath the podcast so people can click on them and just go directly there.
Thank you.
Yeah. So this has been a really lovely conversation. See, we went totally off script for half of it. So
we were having fun. And it just happened to be recorded.
So I would like to thank our guest, Shermaine Perry Knights, for joining Sherry and me today. It's been really lovely. And of course, I need to tell our listeners, our viewers, that our podcasts are supported in part by New Mexico Arts, the New Mexico Humanities Council, Sandia Area Credit Union, and organizations like Military Brats Seal and Military Brats Registry. And so thank you for so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we wish you the best with your books and your future books and your future books. We know you're going to be prolific.
Thank you.
Sherry, any last words, thoughts?
I just thank you. Thank you for doing this and sharing with our viewers about, you know, being a storyteller. You know, I agree with you. I think, you know, we got to get our stories out there, you know, and I appreciate that you're, you know, setting the example and, you know, showing people how they can, you know, bring their story out there and share with generations to come, you know, with their own children, their own family, or so I just appreciate you being brave enough to share your story.
Thank you. They don't believe our stories anyway, so you might as well publish it.
Right.
Nobody believes when you say, I walked the wall of China part of it. And people are like, what? It's like, yeah. We were on vacation.
Wow. That's on my bucket list. That's on my bucket list.
You can do it.
Wall of China. Yeah. All right, guys, I'm going to sign us off. It was wonderful. Bye.
Bye. Thanks, Cersei.